Indie Proud, yes, Indie Proud, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Proud, yes, Indie Proud, on Indie Live Radio. In relation to the treatment by the BBC of how hypocritical Jo Swinson can be, and she's not getting interrogated. I've seen Channel 4 do it, but not Sky, not BBC, hold her to account in Scotland. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, she's a Scottish MP. She's been a Scottish MP for a good while. And when you consider that a Scottish MP is now the leader of a UK party, the Liberal Party, one of the oldest parties in the country. And yet, if you look at the record that you and I know about locally, and the things that she's voted for and the things that she's voted against, it would turn your hair white. And yet, nothing's happening up here. Nothing has happened to expose that. Not to expose it. It's not the BBC or the media's. But what they should do is interrogate, you know, saying that what she's portraying that she's going to do in the future is exactly the opposite of what she actually did when she was in power. And the fact that she's knocking out, working closely with certain parties, but is quite happy to work with the Tories, tells a story in itself. And if you look at, she was an enabler for some of the worst things that's happened to ordinary people since the war. And that ended in 1945. You know, it's the things that were decimated, the austerity agenda was created while she was in the government that whole period.
She was voting for it, and people in Scotland to this very day are suffering because of decisions that she voted for.
And the problem is, it's a fact, you just go out there, folk don't realise that what the Liberals did in Scotland. You can hear Willie Rennie pontificating, you know, on a weekly basis about this, that and the next thing. And everything he talks about needs money. And of course, it was the Liberals, and Swinson was right at the heart of it. Vince Cable, right at the heart of it. Liberals, right at the heart of government, putting that in place. I mean, the biggest one that we do know about in Scotland is the fact that, and it was nothing to do with Scotland because we had the power on tuition fees, and you'll remember that they said that when they get into government, then they will abolish tuition fees, and, you know, within a millisecond, so that it could be very important people in London. They gave that up. They just chucked that out the window. But so that was bad in itself. But all the things that they put in place and decimating the budget was another thing they could do. Like other countries were in trouble with the financial problems that were created with the world collapse of the financial sector. They took a bit longer to pay their debt. And this idea, the only way you can do it, you know, look at Ireland, they suffered badly, but they took a different route to sorting the problem out. And we've not sorted our problem out yet. Ireland has, a country like Ireland, has managed to do it, you know, and we are still in this austerity period. So there was other ways to do it without putting enormous pain on to ordinary people.
Yeah.
But back to the Jo Swinson and the Liberals, they allowed that. Not only did they allow it, they were part of the architecture of that.
Yeah. Because I look at, I listen to Willie Rennie, and it's on an important subject of mental health. BBC This Week, nothing at all of a report that came out of the Scottish Government's plan for 3 years of 800 extra mental health staff. And already after 1 year, they've got on almost 300.
Yes.
Not a word on the BBC.
No. That's the contradiction. What I'm saying is that unionist politicians, by and large, are protected in Scotland by all the media, almost exclusively protected. And it's the contradiction that what they say and what they do. But the good thing is, Ray, like I'm saying, the fact that Joe Swinson has become the leader of a UK party has not been allowed to stand in England. They are knocking lumps out of her in England and exposing her. And I can assure you this, as sure as Christmas will come on the 25th of December, that will happen. Then they'll drop her like a hot potato, just like they drop Ruth Davidson, because what the argument that's been put to the people in England is not sustainable for the people up there, for the BBC, particularly up here, not to get caught out with a protection racket that they've got with unionist politicians.
Well, I personally feel that Joe Swinson won't even stand if there was a general election snap or what. She won't stand in Eastern Bartonshire again.
Well, I think...
I personally feel that she would be, because of evil English votes for English laws.
I think you're right that there's the prospect that she'll, if you work out, again, will the people in England who have no clue about evil, they don't understand that Scottish politicians don't participate at a UK level on matters affecting England. They don't know about that. Because it's Scottish and it really doesn't matter and nobody articulates the argument and nobody exposes that. But I'll tell you what, there will be some votes coming in the next parliament if she gets elected again. And there will be things that are really, really important to the English people. And they'll not understand how come she didn't vote. It's not that she'll be abstaining, because she can't abstain. Yep. She just can't vote. And that the chickens will come home to roost.
Yeah.
And they'll put the pressure on, just like the media in England are putting the pressure on the Liberals right now, based on their voting record. The fact that she's unable to vote, people will not understand that. And that they probably won't even articulate the argument, well, she's a Scottish MP, so she can't vote. They'll just not tolerate it. So that means the Liberals will be considering right now that what do we do? We need to get her down here in an English seat so that the leader of the party in the UK
can
vote in all these things.
Yeah. Right, on a subject which I'm sure listeners will be very interested in your thoughts, Angus Brendan McNeill and Chris McElney came up with a point for discussion at conference, which was knocked back, referred to as Plan B in relation to using a manifesto for a general election to call for independence. What's your thoughts, please?
Well, first of all, if I take that one head on, if I say to you, there can't be, when it comes to independence and self-determination, there can be no Plan B. You can't have two Bannockburns. It's as simple as that. There's only one plan, and that's Plan A. And the United Nations Charter clearly states that if a majority of a people want to be independent, they're in... providing they legitimately show it, and that can be verified, they will get their independence. That's how it works. Now, I think it's well-meaning what's been suggested, but I think it's ill-advised, and it's ill-advised for a couple of reasons. And the main one is we already have a mandate, and that mandate is given in an election in Scotland, not in the UK, given to the people in the Scottish Parliament. And there's two parties involved in that decision by majority in the Scottish Parliament, the Greens and the SNP. The government has stated that an independence referendum will take place based on that mandate. Why would you want to go and seek another mandate in a Westminster Parliament, and as I said earlier on, 650 MPs, and we've got 59, forget the 59, it's not MPs that give you the mandate, it's the people that give the mandate. And where I think it's misguided is simply like this. There's a new research that shows that 40% 40% of Labour voters want independence. And the idea that that 40% will give up the right to vote for the Labour Party and come and vote for the SNP is just bananas. You know, and, you know, you've got people who vote Tory and people who vote Liberal who want independence, but they will not, under any circumstance, vote SNP. And the idea that you put a call out to, we will determine, the mandate will be based on people voting for the SNP. Why do you want to, why in goodness names do you want to disenfranchise people who won't vote for the SNP? And I understand, I'm a former member of the Labour Party, I understand why people won't in another party vote for the SNP. Why should they? Why should they give up what they believe in? And the point you made early, to me earlier on was that when Scotland's independent, there'll be other parties, there'll be their parties that they can vote for. So, you know, we could get every MP at Westmount, Scottish MP, and win every seat in the SNP, and we nearly did. But that doesn't give you independence, it does give you a mandate, because it's the people that give us the mandate. That's phase one. We've got phase one, we've got it, the mandate. Phase two is the people. We need to be clever, and I don't mean clever in a smart way. I don't mean that to be, you know, to cheat and things like that. No. We need to empower people to inform them. We need to show them the proof, give them the evidence, you know, knock down the lies that spouted, I'd say, great stuff in the National yesterday, laying out the myths about independence. More of that, to wee blue books, to explain what independence is about, the good, bad, and the indifferent about to achieve that, the obstacles along the way, the way to overcome it. So we need to engage with people and not focus in on, you know, going to Westminster and looking for another mandate. I think it's divisive. It's an argument that we don't need. But for those reasons that I want to understand that people have got, you know, reservations, and I want to spend my energy and my time to bring them on board and not disenfranchise them from the parties who they would like to vote for after independence. They're entitled to vote for their own parties. So don't say to people, in my view, you need to vote for SNP in an election for independence. No, you need to vote for independence, mm-hmm, for a mandate, not for a party.
Thanks, Phil. That's a very interesting angle that I hadn't thought about. In relation to preparations, how confident are you in the progress that's being made in readiness for independence? That puts someone who's still to be convinced at ease. I understand, obviously, Nicola has announced that there's going to be a report after this summer regarding economy, to satisfy the concerns on economy. Obviously, we've had the Growth Commission and had discussions regarding currency, but still, I was watching the programme the other day on Common Space, and they were interviewing people in East Renfrewshire, and the number of the people that they interviewed on the street were still totally unaware of the currency issue concerns and concerns about pensions. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel regarding the current state of readiness to inform?
Well, I think I said very early on in this conversation with you, Ray, that we need to be very, very careful in how we articulate that. And there is a time to bring that into the public domain. And when we do it, we need to be very careful about it, because I really feel that if we conflate Brexit with independence, it would give the impression, because you can see the determination and the work that's been done on Brexit because of what I've already said, that the damage that could be that could happen even if Scotland was independent with Brexit. And so we need to, and I did say in my view that Brexit will happen. So the type of Brexit that should happen should be the softest possible one, with less damage done to both the Scottish economy and the English economy or the UK economy. So, so when it comes to when we talk about these issues, I think you're right. We are making all the preparations, and these key points that you're making are the points that I'm saying that we need to engage with individuals. My view is that the way to do that is not per se to ram it down people's throats. I found that I get more reaction in a positive sense to the message when I point to where someone can get that information, and in a basis that's qualitative and quantitative. In other words, I found a wee bloke book of immense value into highlighting something, giving detail, and where it could be quantified and authenticized. So I think, you know, it's a combination of more engagement, particularly with the grassroots. What I said about other parties, my happiest time in the last campaign was when I went into the Yes Hub in Clybank. And, you know, I know there was a good few SNP people there and good friends of mine, but the bulk of them were just ordinary people. And the enthusiasm and the work rate and just the sheer energy that was coming from that is where we should spend time, not parties, but with people, and find ways to, like the National, the newspaper work on yesterday was immense, to be able to give that to, in part, to people that then sends them to go and look somewhere to check it up. There's no better convert than giving someone the kind of the steer, and they go and check it up themselves. And it's not you saying this, you know, this idea. I'm telling you this, boy, and I'm telling you for a fact, and that's how it is. That's true.
Yeah.
The best thing in my view is this is something that I believe. This is where the information is. It's convinced me. Go and have a look at it and prove yourself.
Yeah, because I did an actual screen grab of those points, which was Spain will say no to us joining the EU, and I forgot what the other one was, but I took a screen grab for just that source.
Currency also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I would have to we'd have to join the euro.
And that you couldn't use a pound and stuff like that. Classic stuff.
Yeah, know? The classic stuff to knock on the head.
Yeah.
You mentioned about grassroots. There's around about 120,000 members of the SNP. On the Yes side, you're probably talking close to 2 million. Nicola has said that she's going to work closely with the grassroots. And yet when you look in the grassroots, there's so many different fractions that we're all calling for the same thing, as if we've all got to work together. So whether it's Scottish Independence Conventions, Scottish Independence groups, Yes groups, etc.
Yeah.
How do you feel she can do more to get connected?
Well, I think, the leader of any party that's at the nitty-gritty of running the country has got to be very, very careful. It's, you know, I don't want, to be quite frank with you, my boss being in charge or giving the impression, because I don't think Nicola Sturgeon is too clever a woman, I don't think she would ever try to be in charge of the Yes movement. But she's got to be careful that she doesn't give the impression The Yes Movement, I said earlier on, I witnessed it myself in a hub, and the SNP, I can assure you, and Clyde Bank were not in charge of the Yes campaign.
Okay.
But I'll tell you something, they worked very, very closely, and in order to try and dominate, everybody was giving their head. The strength of the campaign, in my view, is that it is
the people.
It is so widespread. Mm-hmm. with you know, I know this might sound strange. One of the best things that I found when I turned up at a campaign in Clydebank was that there was about four or five folk for the Labour Party,
mm-hmm.
you know, out in the street with me. You know what I mean? You might think, well, I'm an SNP guy, so I mean, it's, you know, it's but no. I want independence.
Yeah.
And here they were. And
In my yes group, we've got SNP, we've got Labour, we've got Lib Dems and ex-Lib Dems, and we've even got Tory. Yeah. And we've got people who are not members of any party.
Why not? Because that's a cross-section.
Yeah.
If it was only SNP people, it's no cross-section of the Scottish society. So we want our joiners, we want our lawyers, and we want our people that are normally housebound, and we want ordinary people, and ordinary people can be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
In a political sense, and there can be a joining, and because no political, that's the ordinary folk. So we need that. But the SNP need to be extremely careful. I like the marches.
Yep.
The marches, for me, some people think that folks should be chatting doors all the time. Well, that is one hell of a knock of a door.
It's a massive knock of the door.
When you turn up to a community, and people and in the community, they're there to see the strength and the broadness of it, and see their friends out in front of them declaring, yeah, this is the best thing for our country. You might have a different view, but we're here to, you know, that's a big knock at the door. It's one day out of the life of you and I, for instance. It's a big happening for them. It's an eye-opener for them. So I'm in favour of that. And you know, the more there are for me, the better they are, as long as they're in different communities.
Yeah.
So it's, again, we need to be careful not to overtake it. But what I was about to say was, when there's a guest speaker from the SNP or from the Greens or from any other party that wants to be there, then as long as it's not organised on the basis of the SNP are organised, we've got a conference,
mm-hmm.
and it's the SNP it turned up to.
Yep.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Right, you need to join up, be a member, pay your money. The Yes group are for everybody, including me, that's a member of a party. So keep it grassroots, keep it vibrant, keep it multifunctional, and, you know, Business for Independence, Business for Independence, Golfers for Independence, if we can. We know you're in England,
English Scots for
independence.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to come and take you over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'll help you as much as I can, but I don't want to take you over. That's my philosophy.
Right. You mentioned Pensioners for Independence. I'd like to finish on one point, Bill. Pensions were a concern for a lot of voters in 2014, and going by reports, a lot of them voted for a remaining part of the UK because of it. The pensions in the UK, if not the lowest of the EU, are one of the lowest of the EU. Since 2014, women have been seriously affected, a particular age group, with having pension benefits delayed and lost thousands and thousands of pounds. What can the Scottish Government give differently to show that a future independent Scottish Government, whatever flavour it is, because it's new, it's not going to be a one-party state, it's going to be a multitude that will vote on. What sort of inspiration do you think we could give to the elderly community that the potential for a far better pension benefit and equality and income, standard of living, can come about?
This is where you might think this is a contradiction in terms, because you know, I made my views known about that a grassroots party should be the grassroots and not dominated by politicians or a political party of any kind. However, I think that the present political parties have got to prepare, if you like, an independence, almost a manifesto for independence. And we have got to be able to demonstrate the people who are, you know, the young and the old are always the most vulnerable in change. But if you look at the points that you're making about pensions, for instance, and it's a simple, straightforward equation when it comes to that, that if you look at Ireland, for instance, and the pension that people in Ireland enjoy, and no disrespect to Ireland, because they function extremely well, far better than the United Kingdom does, by a country mile. But no disrespect, and I don't want to be sounding demeaning, but if you look at the resource that Scotland is, and what we have got going for us, I can't believe for a millisecond that that we can't at least give a commitment in advance of any referendum, a cast iron guarantee. I don't want to hear a triple lock. What does a triple lock mean? A triple lock means to me, a lock is actually to keep something out. I don't want to hear triple locks. I want a cast iron guarantee in a simple statement that says, in the event of independence, pensioners in Scotland will get X factor. And that X factor for me is either the same as, that's my bottom line, as a pensioner in Ireland, or even more.
So cast
iron guarantee, number one. And I do that not on the basis of that it can't be achieved, or because Ireland had its troubles, when the economic, the financial sector melted, but they still looked after their people and their pensions. And then the other thing is that it's quite practical and possible. If you look at the present time when it comes to WASPI women, and my wife is one of them, but I don't say it with a vested interest, but if you look at WASPI women, it's just a fact that people in Scotland die earlier than they do in England. Substantial difference. So what's actually happening is, if people are living longer in England, that means there will be more people enjoying a pension longer than they are in Scotland. So in other words, the pensioners in Scotland who are less well, if you like, because they die earlier, are bankrolling.
Yeah.
So I think it's possible to look at these numbers. I haven't looked at them, but I just instruct, you know.
Well, it's 29% of average earnings is the pension in the UK, whereas in Ireland, 42% of average earnings.
I don't mean that, though.
Oh, sorry.
I'm talking about exclusively if we just take WASPI women.
Oh, right.
Uh-huh. Not pensions as a whole.
Uh-huh.
We should be able to just we do the numbers without impacting on the take.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to increase it back to what it was.
Yeah.
So, and as our people, you know, I think we need to be realistic. Our goal is to lift the life expectancy of our people to the average in Europe. We're doing a good job. That means that, how will that happen? Lift the people out of poverty. Everything that happens, health inequalities, poverty, the attainment gap, they all sleep in one bed. It's just, how it all starts is the take-home pay, and the people who are not earning enough money and taking, you know, because of the restrictions on their wages, then all the other things. That's why I say they all sleep in one bed. If we do our work right, increase the wealth of what our people, gradually but gradually, the age limit, the living people will live longer.
This goes very much along the lines of the inspirational talk that Nicola gave to the TED last week. Did you?
No, I didn't see it. So I'm not stealing her stuff, I'm
telling you. No, you're telling me. She gave one of the best speeches off the cuff that I've ever heard. So if anyone hasn't seen or read Nicola's talk at TED, basically, in a nutshell, it says, GDP is not the overriding story of the wealth of a country. It's the wealth and the health and the happiness of that population. And that's what Scotland should be aiming for, is that we look after not only the economy, but we all look after the people. And when people are healthy, they're economically sound, they are happier.
Naturally.
Yeah. Any listener, if you haven't seen this or read it, Google it, look on YouTube. Phenomenal talk. Gil, thank you very much indeed for your time today. It's been really interesting to hear your points of view. And thanks very much indeed for coming on the Indie Pod.
Well, I enjoy it. It's great to get the opportunity to say things.
And is there anything we haven't spoken about that you'd briefly mention?
No, I didn't come here with any ideas. I just came to have a wee chat with you. So
great.
These were great questions that let me spout a few words. And hopefully it helps people and maybe stimulate thought. And maybe people don't agree with me, and that's fine. This is a very serious time that our country is engaged in at the present time. And stimulating thought and to get to the best place is what I'm after. And, who's right and who's wrong? It's maybe not me, but it's great to get the opportunity to put my view forward, and it just might make a change in somebody's life.
I'm sure listeners will have appreciated everything you had to say. Thanks very much, Adigal.
Cheers, thanks. Indie Pride, yes, Indie Pride, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Pride.